morning, everyone, and you're very welcome to this inaugural podcast for Sjogren's Syndrome in Ireland. My name is Lorna Kieran, and I'm the Public Patient Involvement in Research Manager, or the PPI Manager, in the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland, RCSI, University of Medical and Healthcare Sciences. I'm joined today by a patient advocate, Deirdre Collins, and Dr. Joni Gowan from the School of Pharmacy in RCSI University, and we're going to have what I hope and know will be a really interesting conversation about public patient involvement and indeed about Sjogren's syndrome. So just as a little bit of context, I'd like to begin with introducing Joan, who became involved with public patient involvement last summer through the University of Limerick's PPI Summer School. So Joan, you're very welcome to the podcast, and if you wouldn't mind sharing with the audience your academic background and interest in Sjogren's syndrome.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Thanks for that introduction, Lorna. So my background is I'm a lecturer in RCSI, and I lecture in ophthalmology and immunology, and I'm also active in the research space. So I am the scientific lead of the Ocular Immunology Research Group, and that basically is we do eyeball research. So we are looking at the surface of the eye, and we're interested in the immune system, particularly what happens when it stops functioning properly. The more we know about how it works normally, then it gives you an insight into what's gone wrong and how we can fix it. And we're kind of uniquely placed that we have a clinical collaborator in the Eye and Ear. So we have that kind of, our group is really dynamic. We are clinicians and scientists. So that's my background in RCSI.
Super. And Joan, I love that relationship between clinicians and scientists, because scientists, you know, often can work in isolation. But I presume when you're working in clinicians, you're really interested in how can the science make an impact for patients and how it can make a difference, which indeed is what public patient involvement is all about. It's really about the partnership with patients. So just before I bring Deirdre in, could you just describe how you perhaps first became aware of PPI?
I suppose it's been gaining momentum over a number of years, PPI itself. And we, so kind of to go back a bit, obviously we're interested in research, and we're interested in looking at in Sjogren's syndrome and patients with autoimmune conditions, what's going wrong with the immune system. So we're doing a lot of molecular work in that space. We also do a lot of what we call quality of life surveys. So we're very aware that the patients who are coming in, like sort of anecdotally, were really, you know, unhappy, mismanaged, not being represented. And so we sort of knew that there were issues there. And we'd always felt we wanted to do something in that space, and we wanted to give back. And sort of, I think the movement towards PPI and the partnerships that we've made over the last number of years gave us the opportunity to be able to do that. I think there is very much now a sense that in order to be able to ask the right questions, you need to have the right team. And if you think about the ingredients, what are you trying to get at the end? Then it makes sense of who you should include. So for us, it seemed very, reasonable and logical that you would include patients and ask them, you know, what you're doing. And I went to a PPI for fighting blindness, and I found it was just fascinating and fantastic to have the patients there, to be able to interact with them and see how it went. Sort of my want to include people in has probably been about 10 years. And the reality sort of happened in 2019 when we set up the Women in Vision and our research network, and just sort of start making those partnerships and those connections to kind of get something off the ground.
Fantastic. And one of those very important partnerships was with Deirdre Collins. So Deirdre, lovely to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us on this webinar.
Thanks for having me, Lorna. It's really exciting to be able to talk about Sjogren's like this.
Super. So Deirdre, I'm sure the audience of the podcast would be really interested to hear about you and your background, and what is Sjogren's syndrome and how did you come to be diagnosed with it?
I've actually had symptoms of Sjogren's since I was quite young, since childhood, and I was only diagnosed in my 30s. So it was quite a long journey from first symptoms to diagnosis. I suppose it's very exciting to be here today now to be kind of talking about it so openly. And
Deirdre, can I just come in there to say, I'm sure listeners, as I am, are astounded that you could have a condition in childhood and yet not be diagnosed until in your 30s. Like, that's a huge diagnostic journey and such a long time. Is that common among patients with Sjogren's syndrome, that sometimes it can go undiagnosed?
Yeah, it is. The major issue with Sjogren's from a patient perspective is that the range of symptoms involved are not recognised by GPs and other medical professions we will be coming into contact with. And there's such a range of symptoms. And it is so, as Joan said, like the quality of life becomes really affected. And symptoms can change over the years. My first symptoms were dry eye, and then that kind of eased off. And then it was fatigue in my teens, and then my 20s, the joint pain kicked in and the dryness got worse. And it was only in my 30s that I was diagnosed. And it was quite a long journey from, you know, those first few appointments with the GP saying, I think something is wrong, something isn't quite right, to finally getting a diagnosis. So yeah, it's quite a long journey. And I know this journey is different for everybody with Sjogren's. It varies hugely, and that is one of the issues.
Absolutely. And Joan, can I bring you in there? Is that typical for patients in your experience, that long diagnostic journey?
Yeah, we were sort of finding when the patients were coming in that it can kind of, the symptoms can kind of rumble on for a number of years before you get a diagnosis. And the problem is Sjogren's looks like a lot of other autoimmune and inflammatory conditions. And quite like systemic lupus erythematosus or SLE, it sort of, people sort of now think maybe it's kind of like 10 or 20 diseases altogether. Sjogren's is a bit like that, that it presents. And like Deirdre said, not everybody gets the same symptoms. And then the disease journey or course is quite different. And from a lot of people, let's say from the time to get diagnosed, can be about quite long, actually, maybe between 5 and 10 years. And then once you have your diagnosis, there's an array of other complications that can develop. And right now, we can't predict who's going to get them. And they can be very different, very individual. You may get some, you may get other, and then you may have, you know, some periods of like increased symptoms, and then they'll abate for a while. So it's a very changeable disease journey for everybody.
So I imagine not only for patients, but for clinicians and doctors, that must be quite frustrating, because they're trying to diagnose and trying to help a patient and not necessarily understanding the myriad of symptoms that they're seeing in front of them. Is that your experience, Deirdre, that you would have gone to doctors who didn't pick up on Sjogren's syndrome because of the variety of symptoms?
Absolutely. And I think one of the issues is that symptoms can sometimes be looked at in isolation, and it takes a specialist who recognises the systemic nature of Sjogren's to kind of put all of those symptoms together. And because, as Joan said, there are so many different symptoms of Sjogren's, you end up seeing so many different doctors. You see your GP, rheumatologist, neurologist, you know, endocrinologist, and the list goes on. And you can end up being treated by each of these people for very specific set of symptoms and not have the disease looked at as a whole. And that's, I think, when the diagnosis is missed a lot of the time. And it is a struggle for patients having that disjointed kind of healthcare journey where you're looked at like it's segmented. And it's really difficult to try and bring all that together and to explain to a rheumatologist what the neurologist said and all of this kind of thing. And yeah, it can be very, very frustrating.
And I've heard other patients, in particular living with rare diseases, which kind of have a similar profile of lots of different symptoms, talk about the need for integrated care and better communication between specialities. Is that
absolutely
something?
Yeah, that's kind of the dream, that you'd have kind of a focal point, I suppose, for all of this. All of these consultants and specialists can come together, and all this information that you build up about yourself and your medical condition that you have can all be kind of put in one place and assessed as a whole. Yeah, that's kind of the dream, isn't it?
and it's wonderful, Deirdre, that yourself and Joan are co-creating this dream and making it a reality. So I'll come back to you, Joan, if I could, because I was really struck when we first met that you were saying that one of the main challenges for researchers wanting to work with patients with Sjogren's syndrome was that there was no focal point, as Deirdre has put it. There was no charity. There was no easy way to get in contact with patients, to even invite them to come and collaborate. So can you talk us through, how did you go from that situation to this situation now, where there's great, great connections being made and initiatives being launched?
It's quite a long journey. We've been sort of, as I was saying, I was trying to find a way to kind of communicate our research, because when the patients are coming in, we're recruiting them for the molecular studies, and the appointments are quite long, and you're getting to know them and get a real sense that there's a need and a want to be involved in research, to kind of to raise awareness about the condition and to be involved in the process. But we were sort of stumped in that there is no central hub where we can contact the patients. Back in 2019, when we formed the Women in Vision and Eye Research, our goal then was for 2020, we were going to host an event in the Eye and Ear where we would invite the people who had participated in our research studies to come and hear what we were doing as researchers. But then the pandemic hit, and that sort of changed our plans. But what we did is we embraced it for 2021, and actually just in the interim made some more connections. And we were very sort of lucky that we were able to identify some fantastic patient advocates and get some really nice supports on board. So what we decided to do was to have a patient information webinar, because there isn't a place for information, and there's no place for a lot of patients with challenges, there's no place for credible information. There's no place where a lot of different information from specialists is curated all in one place. And they also felt very frustrated that they didn't have a voice, that they're being mismanaged, they're being ignored. And there's no sense of community as well. We've heard back from patients that there's no mutual support, no sense of community. So there were a lot of things that were lacking. And we really wanted to give back and tell the patients that, you know, we're working in the space. This is what we're doing in research. We'd love you to tell us if there's more that we can do. And then we decided to do the patient information webinar with the range of specialists.
Fantastic. And Deirdre, can I ask you, how did you get involved then? And was that lack of credible information and that sense of a lack of community or patients not having a voice, was that something that you were experiencing as a patient or as a patient advocate?
Yes, kind of a universal experience, I think, with those of us with Sjogren's, that we have to do a lot of work ourselves, a lot of research ourselves, and it can feel like very lonely, and that there's no community, that doctors don't understand, family and friends don't understand. And so when Joan approached me, I was very excited that there's these wonderfully talented scientists and clinicians who are actually genuinely interested in making things better for people with Sjogren's and in finding new research and treatments. And so I was delighted to take part. And it's one of the major feedbacks we've gotten from that webinar was that patients do want a community, they want a voice, they want to raise awareness, but also they very much want to participate in research. They want to get involved, and there hasn't been the opportunity for them to do that so far. So, you know, this concept of PPI is really exciting in that regard, to bring scientists and the patients together to try and make things better for those of us with Sjogren's.
Absolutely. And before we hear from Joan how she went around organising the webinar to ensure that it was inclusive of the patient voice, just to clarify for listeners, because sometimes we bandy research terms around, and when we talk about patient involvement in research, we do mean partnership and that the patients are there as advisors and partners to the researchers, rather than research participation, where patients can often be can participate in research as research. So they're donating information or participating in research experiments or filling out questionnaires or surveys, etc. But this approach was different, Joan, because you wanted to kind of co-create an event with Deirdre that would be useful and that would place patients at the centre.
Yeah, like if you think about what you wanted at the end, it makes sense to include people in. So in RCSI, when we make curriculum, we do a thing called backwards design. You think about what you want at the end and then reverse engineer back to the top to see what you want included. Very much took that approach with this. So if you think about what did you want at the end, I wanted something that was co-created with patients, that actually met the needs of patients. Then you go back, who should be included, who should we feature? So at its core, it was an event that we wanted to hear the patient's voice. And also we wanted to get the range of healthcare specialists that are involved in their treatment and management together in one central place. So we had ophthalmology, dentistry, dermatology, rheumatology, women's health. We had research, and we also had expertise from RCSI around patients being involved in research represented as well, and sort of explained that to patients about the different types of way you can be involved in research. So the idea was to have that there, and then to make it inclusive, to make sure we were doing what we wanted. It was really important to actually have a patient voice. And like we said, there's no charity and there's no support groups. So we went obviously to social media and to try and find how we could contact people. We also have patients who have or attended and given samples and donated to science. So there was a list of people who we contacted to ask to be involved and to share their journey publicly, because it's quite a thing that we're asking as well. And Deirdre had previously spoken to a journalist for the Irish Independent, and we found that article and reached out to Deirdre to ask her, would she like to be involved and co-create this event with us? And when we also reached out to another lady, Dorothy, and she was fantastic. She again spoke to a journalist about her journey. And for us, for the event, it was great, I think, that we had the patient voice first and then sort of following it down. It was great. Like, it really did help shape things for me. I like, because you sort of think you're working in this void, you're working in this vacuum, and you think you're doing great, and you think you're doing all, you know. But it was for us, it was kind of affirming that the event that we were making, you know, it was doing what we wanted it to do. It was meeting the patient needs. It was going to be something that was seen as having value. And then it also ensured that sort of things we wouldn't have been aware of, terminology and length of time. And Deirdre will tell you, I'm all like, let's do everything all at once. So she was like able to rein me in and say, no, maybe not do everything all at once. Maybe think about time and screen time. So it was a lovely co-creation, I think.
Fantastic. And it's so just to kind of come back on what you've said, it sounds like despite the lack of a patient charity, that you went and did your detective work as a researcher and you went on social media and you found Deirdre through social media and through her previous advocacy work. So how did you feel, Deirdre, about being approached out of the blue by a researcher like this?
It was actually probably really good timing, because I had just done that article in the Irish Times, and it was the first time I'd spoken publicly about it, because it can be quite a private journey when you're suffering with something that not many people understand, and there's no community out there. There's a tendency to deal with it in a very kind of hidden, private way. And so when I'd made that decision to actually speak about it, I was kind of energized by it. And then Joan stepped in and was like, well, I'm on a roll, so let's keep going. And it was such a unique experience, that webinar, and it was the first time I had seen all of these specialists talking about Sjogren's and the different aspects of Sjogren's and bringing it all together rather than having it all separated and segmented, just bringing it all together. And it was really, really interesting to see that happen, and also to actually be experiencing that webinar knowing that other people with Sjogren's were attending as well, because it's very difficult to find other people with Sjogren's who are living with the same condition in Ireland, because we don't have that community yet. And so it was such a unique experience, and it was wonderful. Joan did a fantastic job.
And what I loved so much about it, Deirdre, was that you were the first person to open the webinar and you were the last person to close the webinar. So
yeah, it was very much focused on the patient, and that was lovely. And that can be quite unique when it comes to kind of medical research, and the patient is kind of often kind of put to one side and spoken about rather than spoken with. And that was just really, really nice, a lovely kind of way to kind of discuss all the different aspects of Sjogren's.
Lovely. And Joan, something I really liked is that you brought in the rest of the patients at the webinar as much as you could through Q&A and comments, but also through a follow-up during the webinar itself. You invited people to identify what aspects of Sjogren's syndrome they would like researched, and then you did a follow-up survey. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think Deirdre will tell you when I'm doing stuff, I'm like, let's do it all. So I was like, this is an opportunity. I've never had that many people with Sjogren's syndrome attend anything. So the way we sort of did a social media campaign where we put out the event. So then we had people come to us. So we said, we are doing this. We're hosting this webinar information event. And we put it out. And then we had a list of attendees. And I was like, this is an opportunity for us to really ask anyone who attended questions, particularly because we don't have Irish data. So a lot of, for my research and a lot of my studies, and even Deirdre for their own research for patients as well, you're looking at numbers from the UK and the US, and they're very different healthcare systems. While some stuff is similar, some stuff is very, very different. So we really wanted a sense to get Irish numbers. So the idea was, we put together a survey where we wanted to understand the impact that COVID was having on the quality of life for Sjogren's patients. And also then some questions about research in general, how people thought we could improve their healthcare through research. And then because Deirdre, we had that partnership there, we were able to ask if there was interest in, patients have an interest in an organization, if there was one there, if they wanted to join, if they wanted to help create. So we were able to ask questions about that as well. And then particularly ask, what are the unmet needs? What do you think is the major things right now that we could improve or we could look at in healthcare to improve your healthcare journey.
And can I ask you about those, Joan, because I'm sure the audience are going to be really interested in what Irish people living with Sjogren's syndrome want to see more research. But just before I do, to flag that you didn't just put the event out there on Twitter. There was like quite a coordinated, you know, campaign around communication, mm-hmm. and there was great support from the RCSI comms office. And I suppose that's an advantage of being a researcher located in a healthcare sciences institution, that support is there.
Yeah, just again, I think it speaks to the partnerships, and it's important to have the partnerships to get our message out there. And I'm so lucky that I'm in research and I have the clinical collaborators, and then also in RCSI to have that voice, that they were able to amplify the message. And actually, yeah, we did with the RCSI comms team that like the helped with the social media campaign, and we got things out on LinkedIn and stuff. So it was a big effort to kind of get it out there to reach our audience. And that's, I guess that's the importance of the partnerships, to spread it out there. And also not to forget that our patient advocate, Deirdre, I felt she was the face of everybody on Facebook. When I spoke to Deirdre, she was giving our messages back and relaying the feedback from the groups that she's associated with. So I had the response. I felt very responsible there as well. But we would, if there were things that were coming up, or even very early on, Deirdre, with the posters, we were getting some feedback from Deirdre, from people who were registering and attending. So it was, like you say, across multiple platforms and with multiple partners. So again, with Deirdre and our comms team.
And it wasn't like Deirdre just kind of came on the day and said a few words. Deirdre, you were part of the planning team. So you were making decisions with Joan about the event and about the communication, etc.
Yeah. And it was wonderful to be involved, because sometimes the patient perspective is quite different from the researcher perspective. And so there are kind of practical issues, but also the type of speakers you'd like to hear from, and just the format of the event, just tailoring it slightly to those of us who might have issues of screen time and all that kind of thing. You know, it's kind of important to take all of that into consideration. One of the main things, I suppose, is that, as Joan was talking about, the platform and cooperation and collaboration, it's by working with RCSI, it's patients to have a very small voice. And it's wonderful to be able to kind of have a platform for that voice to be heard. And that's something we can't do on our own. It's difficult to communicate with the medical professionals and the medical community as a small patient group. And so it's wonderful to have this platform and this voice. And we're kind of working together now to try and create a Sjogren's community. So hopefully we'll kind of become more involved and we'll have more events.
Yes, this is so exciting. And let's come on to that in a moment, but just to acknowledge what you've said there, which I think is part of the power of PPI and the partnership between patients and researchers, is you have the support of the university community and assets to be able to amplify the patient experience.
Absolutely.
And the message more quickly into medical training and medical education and indeed medical research. So Joan, I just want to come back to you, because you were going to tell us about the survey in the event and kind of the top things that patients wanted researchers to look at or that they were concerned about.
Yeah, so we put out that we asked the question, what could we focus on right now to improve your healthcare treatment? What should researchers be focusing on? And I think, I wasn't surprised with diagnostics and therapeutics, they are things, so something to help with the diagnosis, because it takes quite a long time to get a diagnosis. So I wasn't surprised with that. And in terms of treatments, better treatment options, and I think Deirdre can speak to this as well, there are no gold standard for treatments either. Mostly the treatments are reactive. So you're trying to treat the symptoms rather than curative. So it's kind of like trying to put out the smoke, put out the fire, but it's, you know, it's again going to come back around again. So you talk about ocular lubricants and anti-inflammatories. So there are issues there. But what jumped out at me, which I was actually quite surprised at, was the need to raise awareness, not only in the general public, but with physicians, so with healthcare professionals. So the need to raise awareness or education in the space with medical professionals. And that's quite something that I was surprised at. And it's also something that we've been sort of thinking about how we could tackle that. Because in terms of diagnostics and therapeutics, that's obviously that's something we can do in our research and our science. But it's kind of an exciting opportunity to think about how we as researchers and patients and working together, how we can amplify the awareness around the condition with the general public, but also we can be involved in education of the next generation of healthcare professionals or also those out in practice already. And I just like to say that we have also in a partnership with Thea Pharmaceuticals, who were fantastic. They gave us their platform for the webinar that we hosted. And they've been very interested with us in potentially doing something in that space where we can do some kind of education around Sjögren's syndrome with clinicians in practice.
That's super interesting. So there's something there not only about the scientific diagnosis and the interventions or the therapeutics and the treatments, but also around population health and being kind of population level awareness, but also in terms of professional development education for medics as well as formal medical education. Deirdre, does that kind of tally? Were you surprised by any of the findings from the patient community?
No, I wasn't surprised at all, to be honest. I think the experience of Sjögren's is pretty universal. And it was just confirmed my own experience everybody I've spoken to with Sjögren's over the last while, the primary concern is, you know, doctors need to understand this more. And, a patient needs to be able to walk into a doctor's office and be understood, and there needs to be a better treatment pathway. So yeah, all those results from the survey, they're wonderful, but yeah, they just kind of confirmed everything I already suspected.
Confirmation bias.
Yes. But it just goes to show that there is just this really clear message of what we need to do. You know, it's great to have this kind of combination of that patients knowing what's needed, that we know where the gaps are, we know where the issues are, and then having scientists and researchers who have the infrastructure and the means to actually fill those gaps working together, I think we're going to work really, really well.
Absolutely. And what I love is that emerging from this partnership, this event, are really clear, tangible outputs. So Joan, one of the things you've been working on is a patient information leaflet that, as Deirdre has said, could be sent to every GP surgery, every pharmacy in Ireland. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so as part of the, so we were, basically our first thing was we were hosting an information event. And then that turned into a PPI event, which was absolutely fantastic, co-organized with the patients. And then I was like, well, while we have the patients here, why don't we do a survey and get some really good information? And then I also, we decided, while we actually have all of these medical experts together and they're participating in this information exchange of knowledge, we asked them, would they give us their expert advice for Sjögren's patients? What's their top tips or their advice that they would give us, kind of in a paragraph style format that we could make into an information leaflet, because that resource isn't currently available. And we were like so overwhelmed with the generosity of people that gave so freely of their time and so freely of their expertise. So we have the first version of the Sjögren's patient information leaflet, and it features advice from all of the medical specialists who spoke on the day. And this year we're going to have version two, where we have from the real experts, which I call the patients. So we ask the patients themselves, if you were to come across someone who's newly diagnosed with Sjögren's, what advice would you give them? And we got the responses were so positive and so lovely that there's, of all the survey respondents, about 95 people, we went through all of their responses and we came up maybe kind of three sort of themes in relation to kind of, being your own patient advocate. That's really important, and getting a good healthcare team behind you and getting good, credible sources of information. And then dental health came up as a really important one. So we've revised the leaflet to have more information on from our dental expert, Dr. Eleanor O'Sullivan. So the information leaflet will be available on a website we're also co-creating with Deirdre.
My goodness, there's a lot of activity going on there. And it's those three themes that the patients have identified, Deirdre, that's so interesting. Being a patient advocate, access to credible information, and then particular tips around issues like dental health. And you've been taking some significant action yourself with peers, with people living with Sjogren's syndrome, to try and create this patient community. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so there's a small group of us who all are Sjogren's, and we're working together to try and create a patient organisation in Ireland for people with Sjogren's. And you know, we probably haven't discussed much today about what Sjogren's actually is, but it's a systemic autoimmune disease. It causes dryness, dry eye, dry mouth, causes joint pain, fatigue, neuropathies, it affects almost every part of the body. And people can struggle in different ways with it, and the symptoms can vary in different ways. I suppose we're kind of looking to get to the point where there's a community for people to share those experiences and to feel like they're part of a larger group and part of a whole, and that they're understood, and that we can work with scientists and researchers to kind of get our message across, get our voices heard, and just feel like we're understood a little bit more. And so we're working away hard in the background and to kind of get all this together. But it's exciting, and it's the first time in my experience of living with Sjogren's, it's the first time that I've felt this kind of positivity about it, and potential and hope, and a sense of community, and that's a wonderful thing, and that really, really helps just mentally as well, is when dealing with the chronic illness, to feel that you're not doing it on your own, that there's other people there, and that there's people interested in helping. So, you know, working with Joan and everybody, it's a wonderful experience.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for bringing our attention to what Sjogren's syndrome is. So we might...
Joan could probably explain it better.
Well, let's do that then, Joan. We'll go back to you for kind of the scientific understanding of, or the research evidence-informed understanding of what Sjogren's syndrome is. But just to say, from my perspective, I was really stunned, Deirdre, that I hadn't known that there was, you know, digestive issues related to Sjogren's syndrome, or significant dental issues related also. So the webinar was so helpful. As you say, it brought in all of those different holistic aspects of the condition, not just the most prevalent presenting issues.
Yeah, and I think it also highlights that struggle that a lot of patients have in trying, you know, you're kind of treating each body part separately, and that's one of the issues, is trying to kind of treat Sjogren's systemically as a condition as a whole, and so that was great to highlight that.
Super. So over to you, Joan, for an explanation for the audience as well as ourselves around Sjogren's syndrome.
I feel very like this is the science part. So Deirdre has already wonderfully explained it. So it basically, for any kind of inflammatory or autoimmune condition, your body, instead of protecting you from viruses and infections, now begins to target you. And it's that inflammation. So inflammation is normally good, because we use it in our body to signal. It's how our body communicates if there's an issue and gets our immune cells to where it's meant to go. But what happens in conditions like Sjogren's and other inflammatory conditions is we have this uncontrolled inflammation that we can't shut off. And that's what causes the damage. So for patients with Sjogren's syndrome, lots of the immune cells in our body go to specialized glands that make tears or saliva or any kind of secretion. And they go there in much bigger numbers than normal. And they're producing all of these soluble proteins that are inflammatory, and they cause damage to the tissue. And this continued damage then leads to fibrosis and scarring, and the glands then stop working, which is why you get less tears, we get less saliva. But any, basically, along the digestive tract, down into the into your lungs, vagina, anything that has a secretion can be damaged. And I think for the patients, it can be kind of frustrating, because we always say it's like dry eye and dry mouth, but that's part of the diagnostic criteria. But there needs to be a greater understanding that, you know, other glands can be affected, and we call them for the research community, it's your extra glandular manifestations. So there can be things separate away from the eye and the mouth where there can be evidence of disease complications. So I mean, chronic fatigue,
Joan,
joint pain,
sorry,
thyroid
Joan.
Conditions.
Sorry, Joan, your sound just went there. You were just saying there can be issues with lungs, with the urinary digestive system, with genitalia, with anything, that any part of the body that secretes, essentially.
Yeah, anything that has a secretion. And I think I was saying for the patients, when Sjogren's is just brought down to or granularity of just dry eye and dry mouth, it can be quite frustrating for patients because there are a whole host of other presentations and complications. So we call those the extraglandular manifestations of the disease. So, you know, separately to the glands. So you can have thyroid conditions. There can be lung involvements. A lot of patients can have serious, serious lung complications, often needing transplantation. There can be severe joint pain, vasculitis. There's an incredible array of other disease complications that can occur. And right now, not only can you not diagnose or there's no gold standard for Sjogren's syndrome, there's no way to predict who's going to develop these extra glandular manifestations. So who's going to get these further disease complications? It can take upwards of 5 years to get your diagnosis. And then 5 years from then, you can develop a whole host of conditions. And nearly 60% of patients go on to develop further complications. And right now, we just no way of predicting who
so
these are.
That's why, you know, research is just so essential, isn't it, to really accelerate our, yep, our understanding of the condition so that we can engage in more preventative healthcare. And Joan, just before I go back to Deirdre around probably the benefit and the impact of the partnership, could I ask you, what kind of prevalence rate are we looking at in terms of population? And is there a gendered aspect to the condition?
So in terms of numbers, you're looking at maybe, it sort of ranges, but you're looking at maybe like up to 1% of population worldwide, maybe 1 in 200 people. And like a lot of autoimmune conditions, it affects women more than men. So it's a 9-to-1 ratio. So for Sjogren's syndrome, it occurs kind of from 50 years onwards. So kind of in around the time the menopause is happening, we have, we see our estrogen levels are dropping off, and that's kind of feeds into part of the difficulty with diagnosis and sort of management, because a lot of it looks like a lot of other conditions, and it's happening in around a time where your hormone levels are dropping off, and sometimes the conditions or patients can feel that they've been fobbed off, that it's, you know, it's depression or it's the menopause, and they're not receiving basically they're being mismanaged because of those contributing factors.
Absolutely. You could see how it could be quite confusing also for doctors if a patient is going through the menopause and then they're presenting with these additional symptoms as well. Deirdre, do you have any comments there with regards to what Joan has been saying before we start talking about kind of impact and the future?
I think there's that issue of when women are diagnosed, and I think it speaks to a larger issue of in women's health, that sometimes a lot of the people, let me start again, a lot of the people I know with Sjogren's have actually had symptoms well before the menopause, and they've struggled to have those symptoms taken seriously and understood. And it's only when things get worse around the menopause that diagnosis starts to take place. So I think that's something that needs to be looked at. But also, as Joan was saying, those statistics, you know, we don't have the statistics we need for Ireland. We don't have that data for the Irish population. And it is really important that we get it. And particularly, you know, we have a unique healthcare system here in Ireland. It's different from the UK. It's different from the US, as Joan said. We need to have that data and that information to work within our own healthcare system for Irish people with Sjogren's. And leading into the benefits of this partnership, I think that's the main point, is that you know, we need to I'm just going to step away for 1 second. Sorry.
No problem. And I'll just come in there to say that I think that struggle to have a women's health taken seriously, Joan, is something that we've seen, unfortunately, in Ireland. And there is quite a movement on now nationally to redress that lack of particular attention to women's health. And I know you've been very active in setting up the Women in Eye and Vision research. So perhaps just before we come back to Deirdre, you might like to say a few words about that.
Yeah, as part of our setting up our committee, the Women in Vision and Eye Research, we were very interested in increasing the profile of female experts in vision and eye research across biomedical and clinical specialties, and nurses, doctors, kind of any specialty at any kind of stage, from beginning to kind of later in their academic or professional career. So we set up the organization to promote women in vision and eye research. So that's sort of gone in tandem with what we're doing here. So it's very much promoting of science, and also around Sjögren syndrome, we're really about promoting awareness of the condition and with the public and also with the healthcare.
Fantastic. Congratulations on taking leadership in that. So we're just going to begin to wrap up. And I have a couple of other questions I'd love just to ask your opinion on. And I suppose one of them is around, would you recommend other researchers and other patient advocates to become involved in the PPI approach to research around partnering in research? And I can kind of guess the answer to this, but it'd be really interesting just to hear your perspectives, Deirdre and Joan, around the value of PPI. Because I suppose a lot of researchers are still a little bit intimidated by PPI, and they worry that maybe, you know, involving patients might affect their research in some kind of a negative way. But my experience has been that there is such a myriad of benefits in that empowering partnership that there's a lot of good to be had. And so I don't know, Joan or Deirdre, if you want to comment on PPI or recommendations to other researchers.
Certainly from a patient perspective, it's a very, very positive movement. I mean, it's the healthcare is about the patient, you know what I mean? We're at the center of it, and it can often feel like we're ignored and we're looked at as data rather than actually as people, and that our experiences of our conditions are just as important as clinical findings. So yeah, I from a patient perspective, PPI is wonderful.
I love that, Deirdre, because, you know, we're really encouraged to, as researchers, to talk about people with conditions as opposed to, as you say, data subjects. You know, it's humanizing, isn't it? Because we'll all be patients at one point, or we have been in the past. Joan, any comments there about PPI from your perspective as a researcher?
I think I can agree that from the outset, it's quite daunting. Because for us, we're always on the other side. We'd be very removed from patients because you're with consent. And so it's very different to be patient facing. We're normally like having samples in a lab, and it's very separate. But I think the types of studies that we do, you're hearing those personal stories, and you can't help but feel there's something that you can do. And now that we're so lucky here that we can have the resources that we're able to do it. For us, yeah, I think PPI is more work. It is more organization, and it is, but it strengthens what you do and it gives it more validity. Because like I was saying, you're sort of working in a vacuum. You know, your research and your peers are saying, yeah, your science is good. But for the patients to know that it's something tangible and something that's making a difference to people, it's really important and it's really rewarding. It's a very privileged position to be in. And I would say that it is incredibly rewarding. And if we can make those partnerships, it's untold benefit. It really does strengthen you and give you the motivation, again, for your research, that you're going in the right direction, that you're asking the right questions.
Absolutely.
And developing something that is of use to a population of people.
That's it, because as Deirdre said, the patients need to be at the centre of it. And indeed, that is the mission of RCSI, is to work in service of patients. So I'm really looking forward to the future of PPI and collaborations such as yours, which I think really illuminate the value and the potential impact of them. Just before we close, is there any final words or comments that either of you would like to make? Anything that we didn't cover in our conversation? We might come back again. I'd say we could talk for another couple of hours about this. But is there anything else that you'd like to offer the audience before we wrap up?
Just to say, we have a few things happening in the work. So there's going to be some more events happening in July, and that Deirdre has some information about places maybe that patients should check out. So if you, so your social media sites, if you want to tell people where to go for more information.
We're small, but we are have started a patient organisation. We're calling it Sjögren's Ireland, and we are on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram as Sjögren's Ireland. And we also have an email address at sjogrensireland@gmail.com if anybody would like to get in touch with us. The early stages, but we're working hard to get something off the ground to represent patients with Sjögren's syndrome. So yeah, check us out, Sjögren's Ireland on social media, and feel free to send us an email.
That's really wonderful, Deirdre. And can I say thank you on behalf of all of the patients that you're representing and working in a voluntary capacity to enable the community to develop partnerships that are reciprocal and that are beneficial for both the patient communities and for the researchers and for the clinicians. I've no doubt you'll have every success in the future, and wishing you the very best.
Thank you.
Thanks a million, Deirdre. Thanks so much, Joan. And then to say to the listeners, if anybody's more interested in public patient involvement and research, the Health Research Board and the Irish Research Council have combined to fund 7 universities to lead out on PPI in Ireland, including RCSI. And you can find more information on www.ppinetwork.ie. That's ppinetwork.ie. So thank you so much again. And thanks very much to Christopher and crew for helping this podcast happen. Have a great day.